of this committee. Shall we move directly to the finance?
Without objection, we will call to order the meeting of the finance committee. This is the, I call to order the meeting of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee on September 13, 2007. Without objection, I would like to move the WMATA Fair and Revenue Policy, item number D, to the first action item. Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing none.
Can you explain the change you just made again?
Pardon me?
I want to do the fairs first.
Without objection, I wish to move the fairs to the head of the agenda. Without objection, our first item on the agenda will be number D, WMATA Fair and Revenue Policy. We need to approve our minutes or consider approval of our minutes for April the 2nd, 2007, June 14, 2007. Is there a motion to approve the minutes as if read? It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. I will note that Chair Hewlett moved the approval of the amendments. Mr. Solomon seconded. Are there changes to the minutes, Mr. Benjamin?
None.
Okay. Further discussion on the minutes? Hearing none. All those in favor of approving the minutes as if read, say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Could we have, as you're moving about, if you could do so as orderly as possible. General Manager Cato.
Yes, sir. We're just waiting for the switch on the computers just because we changed the presentation.
Yes, I understand.
That should just take a minute.
Okay, if everybody could take their seats. Now, let's make sure everybody has the materials that have been provided. Does everyone have the latest material?
It should be in your bunker.
There's something that has just been passed out, which I don't believe is, Mr. Cato, what I have in my hand, is this in the binder?
I can't really want to take a read from this.
Binders are all.
Yes.
The binders,
no,
are correct.
The binders are correct.
Okay.
So you want to have the new materials?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Where are those?
Well, let's make sure we're all on the same page.
I don't know what that is.
Mr. Cato, this is the Finance Committee Action Item 3D, September 13. Materials to be provided at the meeting. This I picked up as a loose document. Is it in the binder?
Yes, it is, sir. It's item B in the binder.
I just want to make sure everybody's got it. Okay, it's in the binder. So if you turn to item D, in the binder. Okay, so we don't have to attend to that so first. And we're waiting just to have our PowerPoint.
One of the issues when you switch presentations, it takes us a little bit for the computer to
boost. Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm ready to go with the presentation, if you are. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this past summer, I have said that I would bring a fair change proposal to the board this fall. And today, I would like to share this proposal with you. First, some background. The budget reductions we made last year helped us make this year's budget by making our base $34 million lower than what it would have been. And that was because we made major reductions. We made some hard decisions in cutting 254 positions from the authority. Additionally, we cut the use of consultants, travel expenses, and cell phones. And in fact, the reductions to consultants and travel equaled $1.8 million, and the reductions in cell phones equaled a reduction of $200,000. We are also aggressively developing ways and have developed ways to cut overtime in our budget. We are looking at a number of ways to do this. But one that I've already talked to you about is our recruitment campaign to fill vacancies. We have begun to hire operators on a full-time basis rather than part-time to help us with recruitment and to reduce overtime. As I have said before, before I bring a proposal to increase fares to the board, I would make sure that Metro was as lean as possible. This isn't to say that we aren't going to continue to look for efficiencies, because we are. And every opportunity that we find to reduce our expenditures, we will do so. From a forecast perspective, Metro is facing extreme economic pressures that makes delay impossible for increase in revenues. I have to say to you today that a fare increase is not an option, it is a necessity. The first challenge we face is one faced by everyone, inflation. Since the 1995 fare increase, inflation has increased about 37%, and twice that for transportation. During this time, the cost to operate the system has actually grown tremendously, but we have shielded customers from paying more. One example, the cost of health insurance has risen at least 86%. And the cost of fuel has increased over 300%, but we did not increase fares during this period of time. The economic conditions that we face at this moment are caused by increases, as I said, in the cost of fuel and insurance, and also the necessity to reestablish our operating reserves. In addition, and looking at the FY9 budget, we needed to determine the costs associated with service expansion and improvements due to the increase in ridership and the overcrowding that we have within the rail system. Basically, the first item is $52 million, and the $52 million represents this current budget, where we had a one-time use of $40 million from a claim that was settled, and $12 million that we use from our operating reserves. To provide the same level of service next year and looking at inflation, and that's inflation that's based on the transportation index, we expect an increase of $80 million. And these are global numbers. We're fine-tuning these numbers on a daily basis as we put together the actual budget. In addition, should the board decide to approve recommendations that we're looking for in FY09 for increases in services from 6 to 8-car trains and additional buses for overcrowding, we estimate that service expansion to be $41 million for a total cost increase in the FY09 budget over FY08 of $173 million. Next slide, please. The funding sources that we recommend to close this gap is a combination of a fare increase and an increase in the contributions from the three jurisdictions. Our fare increase proposed that we raise $153 million in increased fares. Of that $153 million, $12 million would be used to service the debt needed for several capital programs that we will discuss in a later presentation. We had planned on discussing those capital improvements, however, by changing the order, that will follow. In addition, we will be asking the local jurisdictions to increase their contributions by 6.5% to give us an additional $32 million. This will give us a balanced budget and FY 2009 without service cuts. The proposed fares and parking fees recommended to this board is that the boarding charge for Metro Rail at peak periods would be increased to $1.80, and off-peak, the rail service would move from $1.35 to $1.75. In addition, the maximum rate for rail increase would be 60 cents, and that's people traveling the longest distance within our system, for a maximum rate of 450. The recommendation for bus service is a 25 cents increase, increasing the rate from 125 to 150. And for access services, as mandated by federal guidelines, would be twice that of the bus fares. In addition, we're recommending that the parking within the system would be increased by $1. Now, this proposal is the proposal we're asking the board to begin a public hearing process. It cannot be increased once this board, should this board improve that process, but as we go through the process, the number we bring back would be adjusted based upon input. Next slide, please. We propose to implement these fare adjustments in January. Of course, the question that I have received and the question that's on everyone's mind is, why so soon? The answer to that is, sooner is smaller. The sooner we implement the fare increase, the smaller the increase has to be. We propose, or I propose, funding the FY09 budget increase need over an 18-month period versus a 12-month period. Should we delay the increase, our analysis show that the increase would be 75 cents versus the 45 cents on the rail system and 25 cents versus the 50 cents. The way I looked at this is, if you were buying a car with no interest and you had to choose between spreading the payments over 18 months versus 12 months, you can spread the payment over the 18 months because they're lower payments. Yet the costs and the payments would be the same. And the same concept is proposed here. This proposal will balance our budget in FY2009, but we have to look for the long term. Without a long-term solution in place, inflation will continue to create funding shortfalls. As you can see, we project an additional cost estimates or needs for $59 million in FY10, an additional $95 million for FY2011. This is very much a function of how Metro is funded. And I'm sure many of our customers are confused by this. It isn't apparent that these fares only pay 55% of the cost of operating the system. The rest is made up by the jurisdictions on an annual basis. This is not dedicated funding, but this is funding that has been increased over the years by the jurisdictions in order to help offset increases to our customers. From a long-term standpoint, we would like to propose that we look at fares and link them to a transportation index. I'd like to make a quote at this point. I know many of you are familiar with the Brookings Institute study on Metro funding that occurred several years ago. This study said that the deficit was by design at Ramada because of the lack of increases keeping track with the increase in costs. And I believe we have to find another way in order to eliminate that from happening, or a better way to respond to increases in costs. In the future, we propose that we set a fare policy which would be indexed, which is tied to the base budget, and that index will reflect the transportation index for this area. And this is different than the CPI. The CPI is an index that takes into account the normal cost of a family living within a home. This index takes into account the transportation costs that relies heavily on fuel, which is increasing at a very rapid rate. We would also like to engage the board in a discussion about setting specific guidelines on the balance of funding from our customers in the jurisdictions. One example, as I mentioned, 55% of the operating costs of our system is provided by fairs. 45% is provided by the jurisdictions. It's my recommendation that we look at that as an established base and tie our budgets and our fare increases in the future to that ratio. Slide 9. Next steps, in order to implement a fare policy, this is the timeline that we're recommending. Again, we're briefing the board today, and we're asking that the board at its September 27th meeting approve a public hearing. Prior to that, we intend to brief next week the Riders Advisory Committee and seek their input. We would like to advertise the public hearings on September the 28th, again, to conduct public hearings in October and November within the district, Maryland, and Virginia. And if the process moves on this timeline, is recommended, the staff will report on the public hearing and recommendations for changes to the proposed fares on December 6th at the special board meeting for implementation in January of 2008. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this concludes the presentation, but there's a great deal more information and detail that we have, and I know there's a great deal of questions concerning this proposal.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Thank you very much, Mr. General Manager. I very much appreciate the thought that you have put into this. I also want to acknowledge the work that the staff has done, and also the fact that on various occasions over the past, what has it been? It seems like years, but I think it's just been about 7 or 8 months.
It does feel like years.
It does feel like years. Where you have mentioned, you know, the fact that you were going to be coming forward with this. But with that said, I do want the public to know that this is the first time that any of us, to my best of my knowledge, have seen these sheets of paper. And so unlike what typically happens with certainly very important issues such as this, where we have received documents in advance, this is the first time. Now, I think each of us have been briefed, and I was briefed as recently as this week on these issues, but I had nowhere near the detail. I was told during the briefing that the materials would be available on Thursday. So on this very important issue, this is reviewing these materials for the first time, which puts us all somewhat at a very decided disadvantage. The second point I wish to make is the fact that I appreciate the intensity of your feelings on this, but this board is the entity that will make this decision. And I want the public to know that this is not a foregone conclusion. What you describe as essential is presented as an option, a very important option, which needs to be seriously considered by this board. But the fact of the matter is that we are duty-bound under the compact to consider how we must act on these issues. And so this, I'm beginning to feel this sense of, you know, that we're at the top of the slide and that, you know, but the fact of the matter is that there's a very important decision that only this board can make. The general manager does not make this decision for us. No other entity makes this decision. Only the members of this board voting at a board meeting can commence a fair policy change, review and consideration. And all of that has to happen in a board meeting. It has to happen in the committee meeting. But I don't want anyone having an impression that this board has made any decision on this matter, and I certainly have not. Finally, I just want to say by way of preliminary that I have submitted to the general manager 6 questions, which are at the conclusion of the materials. I appreciate very much you responding to each of those questions. In due course during this discussion, I want to review these issues as appropriate, because some of these questions are very important. But let me begin by asking one question, and then let me see who wishes to speak on this issue. Let me do. I heard.
Just go all the way.
Would that be all right? Would that be all right? And I think our distinguished chair. is willing to be last? I was going to offer you first shall be last, the last shall be, which do you wish?
It doesn't matter, your question.
Okay. Then, since I heard Mr. Zimmerman first, we'll start with your colleague from Maryland, and we'll go all the way around. Is that okay? And everyone will have the opportunity to speak. But let me ask as my first question. You have mentioned in our briefing the possibility of outsourcing real estate and parking. And yet I didn't hear, I was trying to listen very carefully at everything you said, but I didn't hear either of those mentioned. Are any of these major options still in your mind as part of this, what we're deliberating?
Those options are still in my mind, but they are separate and apart from a fare increase. In my discussions and briefings with board members and looking at those issues, we're still wish to move forward and bring back to this board options on parking, whether we can contract that out, if there is any advantage to us doing that. Should we do that, those are capital revenues. And from a real estate standpoint, it's my understanding if we were to receive those revenues, those would be capital revenues, and so they would not directly impact the fare increase, but we're still looking at that. I didn't want to confuse the two. There are many things on the table, and after several discussions, and my judgment from a review standpoint, we wanted to complete this, continue to move forward on the other options, but separate the discussions on the operating and the capital.
Okay, so before I call on Mr. Solomon, you do understand the points I've made about the role of this board?
Oh, absolutely. I understood those points before you said it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. just for the sake of clarity.
I understand.
Mr. Solomon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did have a briefing by the general manager and the chief financial officer last Friday. I guess most of the board members had a similar briefing. I, too, just seeing this information for the first time and uneasy about making a big decision like this on information that we're just getting in our hands that we have to thoroughly digest. I'm also uneasy about outsourcing the parking without further information about who's going to do it, how we're going to do it, how it's going to be implemented, and the price of that. Because when I looked at the fare proposal, I mean, for the long-distance rider, there was a proposal for rail maximum $450 and a maximum parking $5. That's a one-way trip of $9.50 for a total of $19 round trip per day. And if we look at it per weekly price, that's $97.50 per week. And not many. I couldn't afford that on a weekly basis. I would probably stay in my car. Certainly more in fares than I would pay in gasoline just to make those trips and possibly park in the District of Columbia at $20. So it's a lot of information that we need, and I don't think we need to do it quickly. And I'm uneasy about following a recommendation that the fare increase should start in January of the year. If it starts, I think it probably should start at the beginning of the fiscal year. And I would need some more information about the impact and the cost analysis from starting in July of 2008 versus January of 2008. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the outset of your presentation, Mr. Ketty, you noted that that you had told us for some time that you would be presenting a fare policy proposal. And back earlier in the year when you started out and you made the decision that you would not pursue a fare increase for the fiscal year we're currently in now, that you would focus on the expenditure side, and as you noted in the beginning, that's what you've done. But you've said over and over again that, you know, fares would have to be looked at, and you referred to a fare policy.
Yes.
You said a number of times that in various different ways that there should be a rational policy that is the basis for changes in fare over time, as opposed to what I would call, using my words, sort of an ad hoc response from time to time to fill a budget hole by coming up with a fare number. And that's what I was anticipating seeing. And on slide 8, you do have a bullet that says long-term fare policy, and you referred to that. I guess you have a couple of things. With transportation price index, you referred to as the basis for some long-term fare policy proposals that, as far as I can see, you're not making today. And you hadn't said anything about how frequently, at what intervals, fares would be changed, or, you know, it's, you're going to tie it to some index, that's fine, but of course, you generally want round numbers, so what does that actually mean if you know the intervals? What does it mean about how fares are going to move at what time? And really, what is such a policy going to be? And I don't see that. And what it looks to me from the presentation that we have is you have a hole to fill, and you've got an analysis of that shortfall, and made certain assumptions, including what you think subsidy, you got to pick some number. Well, ultimately, the board will decide, as Mr. Graham was saying, the manager proposes, the board disposes. That's the way it's supposed to work. But you have to make certain assumptions about that. So you made assumption about subsidy increase, make certain assumptions about cost, and what's left over is filled by, seems to me, this fare proposal, this increase proposal, for which I'm assuming the numbers all add up to that. That can all be gone over. But it looks to me like we're on the verge of doing exactly the same thing that, frankly, we've done in the past, and which I thought you had provided a pretty good critique for in coming in the beginning of the year. And I have to say, I find that a little disappointing. I approach this at the beginning of this process with an open mind, and I don't start with any fixed notion about whether there is or isn't to be a fare increase, how much it should be if there is one, whether it should start in January or July or a year from January or whatever, or tomorrow or anything else. I'm prepared to listen to the analysis and the discussion about all of that and decide on the merits. I recognize that fares probably can't stay the same forever just because everything else doesn't stay the same forever and costs do increase, and even the cost of this has to reflect that at some point. When we've done fare increases in the past, I have repeatedly called for policy for fares that would have regular intervals, not too frequent, but at known frequencies, and at reasonable amounts that kept the cost of transit service within reason, meaning looking at two things in particular. One, that we don't discourage choice riders, which Mr. Solomon was just addressing, from using transit and putting back in cars. And on the other end, that we don't unfairly burden those who don't have any choice, but for whom the cost of transportation can be a significant cost of living factor for them. And the last time around, we had back-to-back fare increases a few years ago, the second of which I and Mr. Graham dissented from. And I said at the time that my biggest problem with it was precisely that we were doing this without a rational policy. I say I'm open, Mr. Chairman, to considering whatever it is that we need to do for the system, and I look forward to all that. I do not imagine that I will be supporting a fare increase independent of the adoption of a rational fare policy that everyone understands and then makes a commitment in regard to what future fares will be. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Should we permit Mr. Cato a response to your statement? Yes.
Well, his statements were very clear from the standpoint of bringing forth a rational policy. We have done some of those analyses, and we will. I'm taking all of the input, and if I could at the end respond, unless there's a specific question.
Okay, great. Mr. Linton.
I could almost ditto the comments that Mr. Zimmerman said. Clearly, we have, as always, choices and challenges. Fair proposal is part of an effort to deal with a budget. And as always, we have all these other options, including the amounts on subsidies. And this recommendation and presentation from the general manager is always a beginning, as we always know. The public hearings, all those are places where ultimately, after reviewing all of that, after analyzing all of the data, after all of our staffs from the jurisdictions examining it as well, ultimately we will have all that information in front of us and we will make a decision. So this is no different than any other opportunity that's come before this board and any other board in the country. I thought it was also very striking that the general manager provided us with information on other transit systems. Since I am still in the business of dealing and consulting with transit agencies around the country, I can tell you that almost every board around the country is facing the same issue and are looking at some of the same solutions, either additional monies from subsidies from the subsidized either by passes of legislation or money from the jurisdictions that they're representing, or fare increases. And you will also see, if you look around the country, that a substantial portion of them are also having fare increases. So we will not get away from that here either. One thing I will say, though, and I concur with my colleague, Mr. Zimmerman, that I, for one, would like to have a board discussion about fare policy. I know the general manager put this in front of us because he wants us to look at the options here, and he also needs public hearings in time in order for this to occur, at least for us to begin to get some reactions so we can move something forward. Fare policy is always a tougher one to wrestle with. It's always one that boards take a lot more time, is a lot more deliberate, a lot more difficulty in terms of coming to, because you're looking at both, not a short term, but you're looking at a long term policy that you're going to be binded by for years to come. Getting folks like us around the table to make those kind of decisions is never easy. And that's a challenge, but that's something that we need to do, and I, for one, with Mr. Zimmerman, would really support moving forward something like that.
Thank you, Mr. Linton. Mr. Monomay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm echoing the same comments coming to my right. I think that we're having a discussion that's not been put in a proper context, unfortunately. I think that the discussion about fare policy gives us a rationale and an explanation to the general public about what we're doing with the issue before us now. And I think that's the piece that we need to have fully fleshed out, fully discussed, fully thought through before we go forward on this year. One of the things that we looked at in the perception study, the customer satisfaction study, is the perception of cost associated with service. And I think putting the fare policy in the context that we're making these investments over time, we're asking for more money from you to improve services, is kind of the context we want to put this in. I think that's the issue we're grappling with. We don't want to be in a knee-jerk reaction to deal with what is going to be, with increasing over time, cost increase for running the service. Working here, you know the costs do continue to go up every year. This, just like any other business, any other service, the costs are going to go up. One of the questions I did have is a specific question I want to just put on the table. On several occasions, the authorities has done these management analyses about what can we do better. How can we make our costs a little bit lower? One of the questions I do have is, are we identifying things that are bringing savings back over time? Are we doing things that are one-time fixes on a repeated basis? Are we looking for things that will decrease costs over a longer period of time so we see some benefit of swallowing a hard pill over a number of years?
Yes.
I feel like that's something that may be missing in our analysis.
No, it's not missing from the standpoint of work that we're doing. We've done both, and we're continuing to do both. We're looking at the one-time cut in expenditures. For an example, just one, cell phones. We made a decision years ago to hand out hundreds of cell phones because of a situation that we have had at that time. We pulled all of those back, and that's a $200,000 savings, but that's one of many efforts. We have task force working on costs, reducing costs of our overtime, of our practices and policies. And we have a matrix that is being developed that's underway and will continue to be underway even beyond this year to reduce costs. Now, I can bring back some of that information, but I want to assure you this isn't just a look at increase in revenues. It's a look at how do we reduce our operating costs.
Well, I think that would be helpful to provide the full context to folks so they make sure this is a balanced effort. But, again, I'll reiterate what I think I'm going to hear. You're going to hear around the table that we need to have this conversation,
yes,
in context
of a fair policy.
Thank you, Mr. Monomay. Mr. Kaufman?
Thank you. I'll start by echoing Mr. Zimmerman's comments. I believe on at least two previous occasions in the decade plus I've been on this board, we've attempted to frame a long-term fare policy. In times past, we failed. It incumbents upon us to do everything we can to succeed this time, particularly because of the extreme pressure we have today with the system that's being broken down by success. We have to wed any fare policy to what, if anything, this gets for our customer beyond business as usual. Reliability, as I tried to capture in the marketing presentation earlier, is more important than a penny here, a penny there on fares. Next, as was well said by Mr. Graham, this is the first time we've seen how we get to the amount we're expecting our customers to contribute to get us to a better metro. A perfunctory review tells me that for the long haul rider, there's the between the rail costs and the parking costs, we're looking to have the long haul rider bear some 2/3 of the cost of making bridging this gap. And that's simply unacceptable. I do particularly focus on the issue of parking. So often it's easy to look at this as a way to capture revenue simply because we can. But frankly, this is the one part of Metro that is fully funded. The costs cover what people pay, what it costs to provide the service. Also, if we were looking to contract this out, the revenue opportunity for a private operator would be primarily tied to what that operator could make out of the parking lot, and frankly, bond restrictions on how that can be used, zoning restrictions on how parking lots can be used, leads frankly, if we put it out, the only option that a private operator could do is to further jack the parking rates. I would just remind colleagues that the cost of parking is just the first phase of what it costs to get to an end destination. Unlike parking in the district, when you park and you're there, coming from the outer suburbs, you pay for the parking, and then you pay again to ride. So again, I agree with Mr. Zimmerman. We have to be serious about fair policy. That, for our friends in the media, is far more important than the change we're looking at before us. But again, I just cannot get over the fact of how much is being asked to be borne by our long-haul commuter.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kaufman. Mr. Giancola.
Thank you, Mr. Cato, for your report. I, too, will agree with Chris Zimmerman about the fact that we do need a fair policy. As a new member of this board, I think that's critical, and that will be an interesting dialogue. But we need to revisit some of these things. More details are needed on your recommendations for further efficiencies in the organization. I would ask each of my colleagues to go back to their jurisdictions to kind of look at the assumptions you've made on subsidies. I think that's going to be part of this discussion as well. Let me end my short comments by saying that I'm a believer in indexing, and I want to know more about your transportation index. I think we need to get away from every 4 or 3 or 5 years looking at fare increases of a big jump and look at annual increases if, in fact, the indexing proves that that's the way to go. You know, that's the way I would want to go. Now, with that being said, the specific question I have is, tell me a little more about the transportation index you're referring to here. What's been the trend over a period of years? That kind of information.
The transportation index looks at the costs associated with transit properties, airlines, the trucking industry. And the biggest trend has been the increases over the last few years has been approximately double the CPI. Again, because the primary factors they look at are fuel, parts, labor, those types versus food that you would have in the CPI, clothing that you would have in the CPI. And the fuel has increased, as I mentioned, over 300% in the last 6 years. And so that in itself has caused the rate to be double of the CPI. Now, I don't have a crystal ball to say it's going to increase 300% over the next 6 years, but it certainly has increased every year and is still increasing as we speak. So as I put that together and bring back, obviously the policy that the board is seeking, we will go into detail of how that's arrived at, what the components are, what's the historical trends, and what the projections are for the future.
I would certainly like to see that in the development of the policy we're going to be dealing with.
Thank you. Mrs. Hutchins?
Thank you very much, Mr. Cato. In bringing my comments, I thought that I would really start by saying, in looking at this budget, we are focusing largely on the fair part at this point, on the fair and the parking piece, and recognizing when we looked at the performance piece earlier today, I noted the fact that it is really what is it that we're buying when we come to Metro, when the customer gets on that train. And I think the opportunity to understand, one, what role the customer is going to play in paying for the service, but I think it's going to be critical that we articulate what is the service going to be following an increase in fare. I think that's a very difficult piece to lay out, but I think it's important that when we finish this process, we will be able to say that the system will perform in a way that the investment the customer makes every day is an investment that is an overall benefit and will keep our customers coming to us. And I think that's going to be very important. I think the parking is important. I'm a little nervous about your recommendation in that I think the understanding of what we will buy is a good thing to go out into the market and figure out what it means. But one thing that intuitively tells me is that it is difficult to outsource unless you're willing to make the investment to monitor. And monitoring a system that is remote in terms of what it brings to us is going to be one that I think we need to be very careful in looking at this option of outsourcing. To my colleagues, I'll comment about what the long-haul trip is. For some people, it takes every service except Metro Access practically in order to bring you through this system. So it is a big increase for some of the folks that I see who travel the long haul between Metro Bus, Metro Rail, and a parking garage sometimes. So I think we need to be careful as we look at this and look at a philosophy rather than just the bottom line.
Thank you, Ms. Hutchins. Mr. Benjamin?
I am struck by the comment that used to be made at these board meetings frequently by former board member Carlton Sickles, who would say, everything that needs to be said has been said, we just haven't all said it yet. So I'll associate myself with the remarks of those who preceded me. And I'd like to focus just a little bit differently at this issue, and I would note the importance of policies. But part of where we are right now is we're about to go out, if we were to approve all of this, for public hearing and suggest to our passengers, who will rightfully be quite concerned, probably the largest fare increase on a percentage basis that we've ever even considered, much less actually implemented. And there are a number of things that lead me to wonder whether we, in fact, need anywhere near this big an increase. And it seems to me, until we get the answers to those, I would be very loath to hold a public hearing on a very large number. For instance, one of the things that this presumes is that the budget numbers which were roughly generated are approximately correct. Based on my experience in looking at those numbers, it seems to me as though they probably could be shaded somewhat lower, and that numbers are shaded lower altogether, they bring a budget that's much lower. And for instance, this budget includes $12 million to refund the reserve. Well, reserves and the resolution that talks about our reserve should be funded in days when you have lots of money and when you've ended up the year with a positive audit adjustment and below budget. That's when the money, according to that resolution, goes into the reserve. You don't budget to put it in. And on years when you have problems like this, you don't try and fund that reserve. So So there's $12 million right off the top that I look at and say, well, why is this even in the budget? And I have similar questions about many of the other budget items. And I, for one, would like to see the basis for some of those items before we assume that the budget is going to require this size of a fare increase. The second thing is this budget now includes $12 million in capital funding. And if I understand correctly, this includes debt service. I don't believe we've ever before asked our passengers to pay debt service. And debt service is very significant in that once you take that amount and you put it in the budget and you go out and issue bonds, you have just told the bondholders that the source of their repayment is passenger fares, which means for the life of the bonds, that increase must be there. We can never replace it. There's no point that we can start to adjust for the fact that this was a bad year. It leaves me nervous that we're about to embark upon a major policy issue, and that's one of the things that's driving this discussion. I did some quick calculations off the top of my head just to give myself a sense of how these numbers work, and I guess I just don't understand how some of them came out. These numbers, if I understand your presentation correctly, are how much money we would need over a period of 18 months, where for the first 6 months they would essentially be put into reserve and then applied during the last 12, in order to generate the funds that we're talking about, the $153 million. Is that correct?
That's correct.
We have about, what, 200 million boardings on our rail system every year? So that means about 300 million over 18 months. And if I multiply that by 45 cents, I end up at about 135 million, and this says 51. And I started looking at those numbers, and I said, they don't come out right for me. Now, you know, maybe you have to adjust it a little bit for passes, and that's about 20%, something like that. So that'll put us down to, you know, maybe 240 million. But even at 240 million times 45 cents, we're well over double this number. So I'm feeling uncomfortable when I look at these numbers against what I believe to be the statistics of our system, and maybe I'm just misunderstanding the proposal, but they don't seem to come together. And so before we move ahead with this, I'd like to have a lot more time to work through these numbers and get the explanation as to why, at a first cut, they don't appear to be where they ought to be. Now, that may be just because I'm misunderstanding something here, but on a first cut, we seem to be somewhat off, and all of these things I understand add up, and each one affects another. And I know that elasticity is one of the issues, and all the sub-items that are here, the peak and the off-peak. But even when I make all those adjustments, I don't seem to come up with 18 months' worth of this fare increase generating $153 million. It would generate, I think, substantially more. Now, again, you know, we can talk about that, but I'm not ready to vote on this until we've talked about that.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Ms. Hewlett?
Well, Peter thought everything had been said before. Now it's really been said. I just would like to dovetail on a couple of things. First of all, I echo the sentiments of everybody with regard to the need for a consistent, reliable, fair policy. And I think that's important. I think we all agreed on that. I'd like to dovetail on what the chairman said about this increase being a it's a proposal, and we all know that it is not a fait accompli by any stretch of the imagination. It's not an edict, and as Mr. Linton pointed out earlier, it will never happen without the input from the community, and we're going to the respective jurisdictions to have our public hearings, and the public input is a vital, critical component of this decision. So even though it is a decision that will ultimately be made by the board after we amass the information, a lot of which has been requested today, after we amass the information from the public hearings, and after we sift through all the numbers, and after we sift through everything that Peter just so eloquently outlined to see if this works and if this first cut works. Only then will the decision be made. I, for one, would like to see some of the information that has been requested and then see if there are other alternatives, other options. Maybe, I think we are going to need fare increases. That's the reality. I mean, the fare increases, as you said, are 50% of the WMATA's operating cost, so budget. And so I think that's inevitable. It's inevitable. And but we have to have more information to see if we can have some better options. And I think looking at the customer service satisfaction report that we had, the people's, that's not the major problem here now with the existing fares. That's not the major problem. Maybe with some fare increase, with a tremendous increase in reliability, then people will not be as unhappy. But we still have to tie it to something. It still has to be a reasonable fare. So I think that I sort of suspect that we can go with a smaller increase more regularly, but I'll wait to see what else you bring to the table. But I kind of suspect, based on some of the preliminary analysis that Peter has just thrown out, that we can go with a smaller increase with at more regular intervals. So that's one thing I wanted to say. And also, I think Ms. Hudgens pointed out about the jurisdictional contributions. We're calling for 6.5%. We don't know about that yet, so we have to look at that as well. And as Mr. Linton pointed out, this is a very difficult decision. I mean, fare increases, and you really do impact people's lives. For some, it's maybe not a big deal for more infrequent users, but for the person who's riding every day, as Mr. Solomon and Ms. Hudgens pointed out, the person who's riding every day using the bus and the train and parking, that can be very, very expensive. So it is a hard decision, and we may end up having to make an unpopular decision. We just don't know yet. But I think we're all trying to do the right thing, and we need more information and a regular and a policy.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Hewlett. In the interest of moving this along, I want to say that I cannot support this today, and I cannot support moving this to the board today. I recognize that, I have to say, I think this could have been handled differently in terms of the information. But there are so many questions in my mind about what is being proposed in Attachment A, which is what this resolution would put out to the public. The one thing that I'm clear about at this point is that this proposal will cause enormous agitation throughout this region. The bus riders, the regional issues, the parking issues, the notion, as others have pointed out, of a $20 per day levy, including parking, a maximum fare, and so on, round trip. I mean, I think we have a responsibility to our customers to put out a proposal which we believe in to some considerable extent. And I recognize that ultimately this will all come back to the board. Ultimately, there will be public hearings, and everything will then be considered, you know, come December. But the fact of the matter is that this board has to have some credence, has to have some faith in what we're recommending. And based on the information that I have, I've asked 6 or 7 questions. Some of the answers are excellent. Some of the answers give rise to other questions. I am just not prepared at this point to vote in favor of forwarding this issue to the board of directors. I am open to other ways in which we can proceed on this in terms of our deliberation. But I think the result of going forward at this point is going to be an enormous public outcry of concern, coupled with services issues, coupled with what's been said about fare indexing and everything else. And so with all due respect to all the good work that's been done on this, I just feel as though we need to hesitate We need more deliberation. We need more information. I mean, just starting with the fact, and I'll conclude on this comment, the expansion of services, $41 million. I would want a very full analysis of that before me. I would want a very full analysis of how providing the same level of service along with inflation is going to cost $80 million. The $52 million is the clearest number that you have provided us, because we know we had one-time commitments of funding. We know that is a problem. But everything else is going to require far more analysis and much greater information before I would be able to vote in favor of this. Further discussion? Mr. Kaufman.
Given the unanimity coming off of Mr. Zimmerman's comment about the importance of fair policy, Mr. Cato and staff have really worked hard to try to minimize the number of meetings we do have as a board, but perhaps one of the best ways we could do this is if staff is prepared to begin discussions with us on fair policy. I think having a special meeting on one of those Thursdays when we do not have a meeting scheduled, perhaps as soon as next Thursday, to begin the discussion of what we mean by this fair policy. That'd be my suggestion.
Mr. Linton?
I'm supporting that suggestion. If that's a motion, I would second the motion.
I'll wiggle.
I think it's a discussion that we need to get on with. I think for a lot of reasons the general manager may have brought up this comment. It takes a long time to get us through, but it's one that we need to finally come to grips with. So, was that a motion?
Yes.
You're over there wiggling. I wasn't quite sure in elementary procedure what that meant.
It's been a long meeting. I would move it.
And I would second it.
Mr. Kaufman, may I suggest that this motion be somewhat expanded so as we can not include just the fair policy issues, but all of the other questions that we have associated with the proposal that is before us today. So that in effect what we're doing is we would be scheduling a special meeting to really review all of these issues in greater detail. Would that be acceptable to you?
Yes, with the codicil. I think it needs to be done in a fashion so there's some bite-sized chunks because we need to be able to it'll be very easy, frankly, because of jurisdictional concerns, because of what's been tried before and hasn't gotten very far. I'd love to give some level of latitude. I would support expansion because some level of latitude to our staff to say, based on what they hear on the 17th from our jurisdictional staff, these are some key issues that need policy guidance. Fall into that broad window of fair policy. So that's a long way of saying yes, but let's be sure it's not just an opportunity for us to wax long, but to actually try to bring some things to closure.
Right, but I think the point that I'm making, if I may, is that there's just a need for some of us to have a much greater level of information and detail. And I just don't want the impression being given that this is just about figuring out how to have periodic and regular and reasonable fare increases, because it's much more than that for me.
I was looking at it in terms, so yes, I would support it, because I was looking at it in terms of what does it mean for our customers? You know, what does that mean in terms of increases in reliability? What does it mean in terms of investment as opposed to avoidance that we've seen in years past? I think that all fits into that need for information. So yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd support that.
So that we could view this motion as establishing a special meeting to review this proposal and related matters.
Yes, sir.
Would that be a good statement of your motion?
It would be magnificent.
Mr. Zimmerman?
So a meeting would be scheduled if this motion is approved. Does the motion then presume direction to the staff to present? I mean, the things you were talking about really involve answering questions about stuff that's on the table. Kaufman is speaking to as something that hasn't been presented at all. So I take it implicit in this is direction to the manager to bring some kind of proposal.
Yes.
Yes, it's both.
Understood.
But I think, you know, having just received these materials, all of us need, you know, to have our question. Is there discussion on the motion? So if I may, all those in favor of the motion, do you understand the motion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. We will proceed to establish a special meeting. May I suggest that those of us who have questions, some of the questions have been expressed in the course of this meeting, but if there are additional questions, that they be brought to staff as rapidly as possible so that we can get answers to those questions. Is this approach acceptable to you, Mr. Cato?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chairman, and in fact, this process today is a beginning. In any request of this type and magnitude, there needs to be deliberation and lots of discussion. You've given me clear direction today, what to bring back to this board, and we will do so, and we will reach out and not just wait for questions, but contact each board member, each member of this board, as well as the advisory committees, and seek their input and their questions and have responses. And so the message to us is very clear what we need to bring back. And I understand this is a long and difficult process, but it's one that we will provide the information.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Crawford?
Further clarification, I was serious when I said, you know, as soon as staff is ready to provide us with this. I don't know whether you'll be ready by the 20th or not, and so I'd ask you to give some serious thought to that, and also the question of being desire, I think, on the part of all of us to have your proposal in advance.
Yes.
So you can also give us some thought, vet it with our jurisdictional staff. So I don't know whether you'd be ready the 20th or not.
If I understand it correctly,
why
it was,
is the 20th?
Yeah, I didn't hear the 20th.
That's just an open Thursday, so whenever.
Open for all of us, though.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know whether there's enough time for it. I don't think we had a specific date for a meeting in mind.
I was just trying to find a date that I think would fall, Mr. Chairman, in the category of sooner rather than significantly later, just because even the time frame in which we may need to act, I would just say as soon as you're ready, then find an empty Thursday that works for us.
Well, I think, if I may say, you know, speaking as one member of this board, we have received information, you know, in a rather sudden way. I mean, I want to make sure that our next meeting we can really deliberate on these questions. I don't want a, you know, back of the envelope. None of us do. And so I don't know whether I would feel comfortable with asking you to be ready on the 20th.
We will endeavor to convene
this committee as soon as practicable. I would suggest, however, that this next step slide on page 9, that it be understood. Again, in the interest of going out to the public with something that has, you know, a sense of credence about it, I would suggest that we not brief the Writers Advisory Council because we're not sure what we're briefing them on at this point. And so I think, unless there's objection, I think we're staying this process at this point until the committee has acted and presumably until the board has acted on what it is that we're putting out for public comment. This would seem to make sense to me. Otherwise, we're going to have a double message that we're going forward with one proposal which this committee and this board has not approved. Is that agreeable?
That's agreeable, Mr. Okay. Chairman.
So, is there further discussion on this matter? Then we can proceed to our next item on the agenda. And that takes us back to
page 11 in the original mail-out
presentation. The use of the operating reserve and refund. We still have a lot of business here before the committee. Some of it is not routine. Who is making this presentation, Mr. Chair?
Good
Mr. Harkam will make this presentation.
Mr. Harkam is making it.
Thank you. This is almost a routine housekeeping action. At the end of every fiscal year, the external auditors come onto the property and audit the books to determine if there is a budget surplus or a budget under, deficit at year end. Unfortunately, at the end of fiscal 2007, there is a budget deficit to the tune of $19.9 million. The audit's not complete, but it's far enough along where we thought we could bring you that June 30th report. As Mr. Benjamin stated earlier, there is an existing operating reserve backed up by a board policy. That reserve in the presentation states $11 million. The actual number is $10,399,343 that is on the books sufficient to pay for deficits when they occur. Obviously, that can't completely compensate for the entire $19.9 million, but with board concurrence, staff would take that existing reserve and use it as an offset against the 19.9, thereby reducing what would become a jurisdictional billing in the fiscal 2009 budget process. So that's part one of this. The second part of this is staff seeking guidance from the board in a policy statement. There are currently what are referred to as jurisdictional balances on account here at WMATA. These are jurisdictional funds that have come to WMATA and have wound up either being budget surpluses for some other reason, and to some extent they sit undefined on our books, and we occasionally even get conflicting instructions from jurisdictional staff about what to do with that money. What staff is requesting is a board policy that instructs us to refund that money back to the jurisdictions if that money is not clearly associated with a board-approved budget. So those are the two-part actions, seeking the board's desire on what to do with the existing $10 million operating reserve and seeking guidance on what staff should do with jurisdictional money that is basically in our bank account but is not associated with any board-approved budget.
Okay. I think on behalf of the District of Columbia, we would request that our $1.6 million remain on account for the time being. Is that right, Mr. Monroe?
That's correct.
Okay. So that just one clarification. So,
and we can certainly handle this jurisdiction by jurisdiction.
By jurisdiction. So if you would accommodate our desire in that regard. Mr. Kaufman?
I think Mr. Zimmerman and I'd echo that for Virginia.
It's been echoed for Virginia. A lot of echoing here today, the chamber. And the $300,000 to Maryland.
I think maybe we've declined implementing this policy.
Okay. But for present purposes, I hear that all three jurisdictions would like to retain the amounts
That's fine.
For this time.
That's fine. And what would the preference be on the drawdown of the reserve?
So that is the remainder of the motion. Mr. Benjamin?
I think that's a slam dunk.
Yes, what's more?
Yes, so absolutely. We would draw down the full amount in order to reduce the audit adjustment because that's going to affect our ability to contribute in fiscal 09.
Okay.
Yes, I would move that the board authorize the use of the reserve in order to reduce the overrun at the end of fiscal year 07.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Is the discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those no. The ayes have it. And that matter is concluded. The next agenda item is the capital improvement program reprogramming. Mr. Harkam.
Action items B and C were attached to your packages this morning. They're in the board binders. There is a relationship between B and C, so at the board's pleasure, what I would suggest is we see the entire presentation for B and C, and then there are two separate board resolutions relating to presentation B and C. Presentation B is staff requesting permission to do a reprogramming action inside the capital improvement program. Just for common understanding, Metro Matters is a term that gets thrown around a lot here. Metro Matters, capital improvement program, for the sake of this discussion, it's really all the same thing. Metro Matters is a technical legal document that the jurisdictions have signed that guarantees certain levels of funding in exchange for Metro delivering certain levels of projects. It's a capital program that began in 2005. It's scheduled to end in 2010. It's basically a $3.3 billion capital budget. In the process of executing the projects, there's a small number of projects that you'll see in a minute. There's 10 of them that need budgetary increases in order to come to completion. It's roughly a 2% change on the original $3.3 billion budget. Just flip to the next page and see what these projects are. Many of these have been talked about before in this committee and in other committees. Some of these have a long history to them. The appendix in your presentation has more detailed information on every one of these projects. What staff is requesting is authority to increase the capital budget to the tune of $68 million to allow these 10 projects to move to completion. There are a couple of them on the list, and I can get into the specifics if you wish, that actually have contractual matters behind them. Staff has been in negotiation with the vendors, seeking agreement on changes to contracts, mods, give and take on achieving success in delivering these projects. But without, unless there's questions about any one individual project, what I do is flip to the next page and highlight what staff is suggesting as a funding source to pay for the $68 million. There are two projects inside the capital budget that we at this point believe do not need all the funds that were assigned to them. One is a bus garage item and the other is a parking garage rehab. The parking garage rehab is a simple one. We got a bid that came in way low under budget. $7 million will not be needed for that project. The West Ox bus garage, there is an agreement now with Fairfax County where Metro and Fairfax will be sharing a garage. The original plan for Metro Matters was for the construction of a Metro garage. At least at this point, that $30 million does not appear to be needed inside Metro's capital budget. In order to balance out the need for $68 million of total funding, staff is requesting permission to issue debt to the tune of $31 million to make this a balanced budget item. And that's really what leads us to the next presentation, which is a presentation on the issuance of debt. So I could pause here and answer questions about the reprogramming or move to the debt presentation.
Can we just hear the whole presentation? Why don't we hear the whole thing?
The next presentation on debt. Again, just as a bit of background, the Metro Matters capital budget that's in place had from day one an assumption built into it about a level of debt service. The program is funded by a combination of jurisdictional contributions, federal contributions, and debt. And that debt is to be paid off over a period of time as the program is completed. In the near term, the original authorization, that's not the correct presentation. The resolution that authorized the program allowed the chief financial officer to issue what's called borrowing authority, short-term borrowing, commercial paper to manage cash flows on a year-by-year basis, and we've been doing that. But basically, the program said when you get to a certain level of commercial paper, it would be more efficient to roll that into the long-term debt and set up a repayment schedule for many years to come. The agreement also had an option for jurisdictions to opt out of that. So if one particular jurisdiction didn't want to budget for years of debt service payments, we could arrange for an opt-out provision. So basically, the first part of this is the $600 million of long-term debt that was always assumed in the Metro Matters project program. Next page. No, back up. The second issue going on inside Metro Matters is Metro Matters had an assumption built into it for a level of federal discretionary spending to the tune of $260 million for new rail cars. We now know, in fact, that we're receiving $104 million, and you can see the fiscal year array of 35, 35, and 34. It creates a $156 million funding shortfall in the Metro Matters budget. This is something we've known about for some time, and actually the Metro Matters agreement has specific language in it directing staff what to do in this eventuality, and the short answer is it says issue debt. So we're now starting with 611 plus this 156 million. Next page, please. The 31 million that's on the first bullet relates back to the CIP reprogramming that I just talked about. Staff is requesting that be funded with debt. In addition, there are two brand-new projects. These are not Metro Matter projects. These are two brand-new capital projects that staff is requesting permission to issue debt to fund, because there is no other funding source right now. $25 million of debt is being sought to speed up repair work, rehabilitation work on the rail traction power substations. Obviously, everyone's aware of the cascading power failures that happened very recently. This is focused right on those type of failures. In addition, another project is out there, the Southeastern Bus Garage. This is a request for $100 million of debt to round out the financing package for that bus garage. This would allow for the completion of the full 250 bus garage with a police training facility. What we had proposed as part of the fare package that we saw earlier was that some measure of this would be paid for by passenger revenues. The annual debt service to the tune of $12 million would be funded by debt service. But those are the main components of this: $611 for Plan Metro Matters, $156 for the rail cars, $31 for the reprogramming, and $125 million for these two new projects. If you could flip to the first appendix page in the package, it really kind of lays out those pieces of what would be a $923 million bond issuance. The bottom of the page, you would see the timing of the bond issuance. On the left, you can see what was originally planned for bond issuance in Metro Matters versus what we would be planning to do now. And that concludes the presentation. I did want to highlight that the reason this is coming to the board now is because we have come to the edge of what we can continue to do with short-term borrowing and existing cash resources, and our treasury group is at the point where we should be executing this long-term debt as it was originally planned in Metro Matters.
Thank you. Discussion, Mr. Linton.
One question. In your slide, you mentioned rail power upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't we require this capital, this debt for the rail power upgrades just because of the movement to A-car trains?
No, sir. There is, inside Metro Matters, there is a program to upgrade the power structure, the power systems, to get us to 8-car trains, originally 33, and then 50%. This is a more focused effort on repairing more quickly what would have been repaired over a longer period of time. It really is focused on that catastrophic failure that we experienced recently.
Well, I don't know why we're going to go down that line, because we've also suggested that some of the elements that of the power failure we haven't identified. I wouldn't want to say that we're addressing it in this budget when we haven't identified all the issues.
I agree. What we were trying to do is identify funding sources for these kind of needs. The process of issuing bonds, bond counsel, hearings, all the administrative work, it takes a fairly long amount of time. And what we were hoping to do is identify a funding source for this project, even though we don't know down to the specific rectifier what went wrong out there.
Okay, I'm just cautious about it. I think we recognize that there's some power issues that may have attributed to that, and that we need to fund some upgrades to that. I would just be cautious by tying one to together. Fact that we don't know all the underlying causes of that, and there may be some other issues that may arise that may require some additional money. I don't want to come back and then say who funded that.
Right.
Haven't uncovered all based upon your own review and investigation. I just want to make sure we're comfortable with that. Yes, we need the upgrade and you need to plan for that, but there may be something else that you might identify.
One other clarifying comment I'd like to make. By the way, we have the new budget books out. They'll be handed to you today. We both have the technical book and the executive summary for you. In the past, we have used part of a fare increase to fund debt issuance. Some years ago, there was a need to accelerate work on the escalators, as we're talking about with now needing to rapidly work on the power systems, and a debt issuance was created to be covered with part of a fare increase in the past. It shows up on page 29 of the budget books.
I'm not surprised by it.
Further discussion? Mr. Cobb.
I don't know about what other colleagues are hearing from their jurisdictional staff, but this is the first time that, from the Fairfax perspective, we've been able to see the actual proposal. And the concern is there are a number of these that certainly, you know, the list of projects needing budget increases is, you know, a list of motherhood and apple pie. It's a question of how the capital dollars are attained. There's options certainly of local capitalization. There's the new transit authority we have in Northern Virginia. So I don't know what the urgency is to act on this today, because frankly, there are a couple of these items that may be able to cover elsewhere coming from the Fairfax. So I just ask if it would be possible to delay on this.
Could I speak to the urgency? There's two issues of urgency. On the individual projects, we're requesting reprogramming authority. We have been through kind of contract negotiations with a number of vendors. I'll touch on the railcar rehab project to begin with. We are nearing the point where if we don't come to some resolution to change the budget for the railcar rehab project, it will stop.
I hear what you're saying, Rick, about talking to the contractors, but you need to talk to the jurisdictional staff, get them that information, because I've yet to see a politician as a finance major. So we need to have the certainty that we're comfortable moving ahead with this. And Mr. Chairman, I'm not comfortable moving ahead with it this time.
The second matter of urgency is one of absolute cash needs. We are down to probably having 60 to 90 days worth of cash left to make vendor payments.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Zimmerman.
I appreciate that and certainly don't want to deny the manager whatever tools he needs to get the job done. At the same time, if it's that urgent, I can't help wondering why only this morning we're seeing the materials themselves. First, we're seeing it, which means that there's a limit to the ability of our staff to analyze it, exactly the kind of work that Mr. Kaufman is referring to. And it's very hard for us then to act without that kind of analysis and recommendation from staff.
We have presented in the past and at various times to jurisdictional staff issues on the projects themselves. As long ago as last May, we were in front of this committee with requests to reprogram for some of these very same projects. So on the project side, the need has been out there for some time. What's new is we haven't been able to find funding sources to pay for those overruns, so we're now moving into, if we can't fund it some other way, we need to add to the debt issuance.
Mr. Benjamin.
Let me first of all understand exactly what it is you're proposing, because I want to make sure I know what the pieces are. You're proposing the $611 million, which is the basic Metro Matters debt service going from short-term to long-term.
Correct.
You're saying there's another $156 million that under Metro Matters we would have funded through debt service if the federal government didn't provide the full amount that it's supposed to have.
Correct.
So those two are in Metro Matters.
Yes.
For the other 156, is 31 and 25 and 100, that's not Metro Matters.
Correct.
Okay, so that's
right. We are not trying to
funded by the passengers.
Right. We are not trying to amend Metro Matters. We're trying to say the first two things you just talked about are Metro Matters in accordance with how it was signed. The next three are above and beyond. They're non-Metro Matters.
Okay. I had there are two separate activities here, and maybe we can deal with them separately. I'm pretty nervous about all of this stuff, particularly in terms of what our interest rates are and how long these debt issuances are going to be. For instance, how long will this 611 plus 156 be?
We were thinking 20 years, and it would be multiple issuances of debt. I mean, we don't have the specifics yet because we would be bringing in PFM and bond counsel and doing all the technical work.
Okay, so what we're doing at this point is authorizing you to go talk to financial managers and underwriters to get more information that you'll come back to us with?
Yes, sir.
Because one of the things that concerns me is under Metro Matters, you can't issue debt that comes due after 2024.
Correct.
So you can't issue 20-year debt at this point. Best you can do is 14. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all of these things need to be thought through. And also, one of the things that was pointed out by some of our staffs were, and that I noticed when I read Metro Matters, is if and when you get to this point, one of the things you do need to do is update the integrated financial plan to show what expenditures have already been made, what obligations have been already made, how those two relate to debt that you're going to need for expenditures in the future, and what the timing is for that, because that all allows them to make the decisions that you talked about how they will respond to all of this. To the best of my knowledge, at least from what I've heard, that hasn't happened. There is not a formal integrated financial plan update that shows all of this.
There is no change to the integrated financial plan, with the exception of the two projects listed in the presentation, which would be a reduction to the West Ox bus project and a reduction to the parking garage project.
Is there one that shows where we are today that all of them have? Because that's not what I heard.
Actually, at the very back of today's agenda in the information items, there is FY07 CIP quarterly report, and we do bring quarterly reports to the committee that track the current year progress. What we're saying is, if I won't get into the details of that presentation, at this moment in time, the burn rate, the spend rate, is behind schedule, but what we hear from all the project managers in the community is that by 2010, the program will have caught up. The delays have been clearly defined and overcome.
Yeah, and I guess I'm hearing that, yes, you do have all of the information, but you don't have the integrated financial plan in the structure that it is required by Metro Matters to be given.
It hasn't changed.
So that they can analyze it.
The plan hasn't changed from what's in the Metro Matters signed document.
Identical to, it's at least changed by the reprogrammings, but
this would be the only change we have ever made to Metro Matters.
But you know that you have different timing on the projects, which affects expenditure rates, which affects bond issuance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that was always part of the Metro Matters integrated financial plan, is what does it actually look like now? And I agree with you. You probably have that information in some form, but it would be really helpful for our financial people that have to deal with this to get it in that form that's called for under the agreement, so that they can review it and say, yeah, this works. I mean, as close as I can tell, the 611 and 156, in fact, you know, are things that we can go ahead with, but the analysis is not complete. And what we have is, you know, here are a few numbers here and here are a few numbers here, but not a whole package that says this is where we are today.
All I would say is, since Metro Matters was signed until this morning, there has been no change. It has been executed as it was originally signed. And
now it's expenditure based. You're saying that every year the expenditures were exactly as originally projected?
No, sir.
Okay, that's the change that makes a big difference.
And if we can't get the slide up on the screen, but that was what the bottom of the appendix one page highlights, is that the original Metro Matters plan called for the issuance of debt. Actually, here it is on the bottom of this page. The signed Metro Matters plan called for the issuance of debt beginning as early as 2005. And what we have routinely said is that because there were delays in the projects, that debt did not need to happen.
I understand.
So this down here is the first time we have ever changed anything in Metro Matters.
And I think what you want to do is take all of that and put it into an integrated financial plan and give it to our financial people so that they can look at it.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And if we could do that, and at the same time, if you could authorize us to proceed with the bond council and the legal advisors to do what was called for under the Metro Matters, the $611 million and the $156, that's the core amount that we'd like to proceed with.
I think that makes a lot of sense from my point of view, that you certainly should be talking to those people about the issuance and the constraints there, and at the same time let our financial people look at it so they have an understanding as to what needs to go on. That brings us to the other part, which is the other 156. This is the part that you would fund with $12 million annually over how many years?
This was 20.
20.
So for 20 years, our passengers would be paying $12 million annually. I think that's part of the fair discussion that we all
yes,
have to
yes,
have.
Sir,
and
yes, sir.
And where we need to go on that.
Mr. Linton?
Chairman, can I make a motion that the first part of this that Peter described, which was actually contained in the Metro Matters, that we allow the staff to go forward with talking to bond council preparation and discussions with the jurisdiction staff so that they can proceed with that. The second matter, which I guess possibly separate for some additional data.
Mr. Chairman, I would second that if it's clear that it's discussions with the staff, because again, while we're all certainly wedded to and not backing away from any commitments under Metro Matters, there's a question of how you get to some of those figures. Yes. There are some other things that are working on that, again, I'm not looking to say that 767 will be the precise amount of Metro debt associated with Metro Matters program. We may see some adjustments, so again, I'm happy to support the motion on the floor as long as it's clearly understood that's to have discussions with staff as a precursor to those discussions with bond council.
For the clarification, I want to understand if the motion intends to authorize such discussion. I really don't understand why such authorization would be necessary, but okay. Is it understood then that no part of this motion endorses anything that's on that piece of paper? None of those numbers, we're not saying anything about those numbers. I don't know whether right, wrong, I'm not endorsing. If I support the motion, am I endorsing any part of what's on that piece of paper?
Are you referring to the elements of the $923 million?
No. Or $923 million. I mean, I don't know where that, you know, I guess that's, is that the actual
767, I think, is the one that we have to focus on. And I, again, inherent in the motion, I think, is exactly what you said, and that's why I was talking about the integrated financial plan, because until people analyze it, we can't be absolutely certain that at least our jurisdictions support that. And I'm already hearing that one jurisdiction says they may have an alternative way of looking at that, which is allowed under Metro Matters. So that needs to be put together so that people can do their due diligence, and so that we on the board can reflect the due diligence of our own staff's, financial staff.
I'm not prepared to say that I can support the debt issuance that's involved here.
Well, and that,
if you want to start talking, that's fine, but.
Yeah, and I think that's the second part of the motion that was intended, at least on my part, and that is that the staff will come back to us after all of those discussions and after they've talked with bond counsel and financial advisor and local jurisdictional staff and say, here's our proposal.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, we don't, Mr. Monument.
Now, before we go forward with the motion separating the two tranches of debt is what we're moving towards.
Yes.
Mr. General Manager, can you give us an update on the Southeast Bus Garage proposal? Aren't there timelines associated with moving forward on the project and issuing debt?
Yes, sir. And I'm going to ask Jack Weaker to talk about that aspect of it.
Good morning. There are actions to be discussed at the next committee meeting in regards to the Southeast. The garage is currently under design for a 250-bus facility. We have an action item before you today to talk about the reallocation of buses to other facilities to allow for the expediting the sale of the property and to proceed with the construction of a new facility. We're hoping to come to the board in December with a number of actions in December to transfer land, to award the site preparation, to go out to bid for the construction of the facility. And so it's the obviously the $100 million is an issue as to the size of the facility that would be built.
Well, I guess my question really relates to, if we're talking about the fact that we're not going to pay attention to the numbers and agreeing to the debt assurances, can we not include those projects in this discussion so we do not, before we make a decision, make a decision? Because that's what it sounds like we're doing. We're making a decision before we've made one. If we don't allow progress to continue on the project while we get comfortable with the whole notion of debt issuance, if we just kill the Southeast Bus Garage project, then we don't even have a chance or an opportunity to discuss on its merits. Well, no, we wouldn't be able to move forward in terms of the timing for the public hearing process and going to final construction on the project if we're not moving forward with this conversation. I guess what I heard you say is that we're not looking at the numbers. We're not looking at what's actually being proposed. We're just considering it.
I don't know what those numbers mean. I'm not endorsing any part of those numbers.
Exactly. So I'm wondering, why do we need to peel anything out if we're just going to kind of have staff look at it? Why would we separate the two?
Why would we? You know, I would agree with you, Mr. Zimmerman, that we don't need to authorize people to talk. You know, and so you're free to talk. You probably know that. You know, what I do sense is an unreadiness associated with these resolutions, and so why don't we just say, at the risk of we recognize there's some urgency, but why don't we just put this off? I mean, because if all we're going to do is authorize you all to talk,
Let me ask a question. What is it that you need, that you feel the staff needs, that they need from us to keep projects on board, to that any action on our part would do harm?
But the problem with that is that they've already indicated that Southeastern Bus Garage is going to be financed. The debt service is going to be financed through a fare increase, right? Wasn't that?
That was the original proposal.
Right, and so we're linked anyway to that other discussion insofar as that, unless we wish
already
to change that.
Huh? Right. So which we've already postponed.
Right. So unless we want to change that in this motion and have that debt service associated with some other source of revenue.
As a suggestion,
Mr. Bonamay, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. As a suggestion for staff work on a parallel track, move ahead on bond council and all the technical stuff needed to issue the bonds, and set it up so there are optional levels of debt to be issued, so that the Metro Matters debt is the most concrete amount, and then bring back to the board options to do this, that, and the other thing.
I think that would work.
That's a more homework.
Well, no, mm-hmm. It just says that they have to do it at different breakpoints.
We upgrade the integrated financial plan, and we bring all this together in a parallel process back to the board for final decision about issue debt or don't issue debt and how much.
The financial advisor isn't really going to care whether it's two tranches or one tranche.
That's right. And so you would do this on the 28th? You'd have a new proposal on the 28th?
Yes.
Okay. How is that sound? Is that okay? And then we're all going to be there. Mm-hmm. It's the same cast of players.
27th.
Excuse me, the 27th.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, let me just echo what Chris said. Staff had the authority to have these discussions with bond council before we came here today. I mean, we could have been a step further if we'd just made that, exercise that judgment. And we're not given any authority to do what they're recommending, but they should take it upon themselves to have those discussions unless there's a big cost factor involved. And most bond council and other professionals will happily entertain these questions with the anticipation that they would get the business at some point, so we can this process along as we keep those principles.
I agree completely. I would say there has been some level of communication between us and the various people that we would work with this. It's more of a dance than anything else. It starts with very informal conversations and moves to become more and more formal and very legal at the back end of this process. And staff was just believing it. We're at the point where it's moving from unofficial to official at today's point, but we can certainly delay this to the next meeting.
With the understanding that you would come forward at the next board meeting.
27th.
On the 27th, with mm-hmm. the proposal that you've described.
Yes, sir.
And there, that would then be subject to discussion and action.
And would that include coordination with jurisdictional staff?
Advanced.
Yes,
advanced.
We presumably. I will ask to have a JCC meeting scheduled so we can get that all done.
Is that acceptable as a statement of consensus? So will you withdraw your motion, Mr. Kaufman? Whose motion was it? Was there a motion?
Yes.
Yes, I withdraw my motion.
Okay. Now, what about the reprogramming? Is that a distinct issue?
It is, but I would suggest we need some time on this side to talk about it and figure out what our options are. There are clearly some contractual matters that are imminent that need to be decided one way or the other, and failure to make positive decisions could result in projects being shut down.
But we can wait until the 27th
to have that discussion. Yes.
Okay, so without objection, then it is a consensus of the committee that we proceed as you've described. If there's really no objection, that's our decision. Okay, our next item is number D, we've taken care of. Number E, award of performance engineering, energy engineering services contract.
Make this one very quick, Mr. Chairman.
This is a program we came to the board some time ago and asked for permission to issue an RFP, which we did. We got a number of responses, and very quickly the way the program works is you have an energy conservation company come in, examine the facilities, and make suggested changes in the consumption of energy. The big savings is normally in lighting, which is true at Metro.
followed by heating, cooling, and water conservation. So we have gone through the process. We're recommending that Pepco be awarded this contract, a 10-year contract. The savings are guaranteed in writing. If the savings aren't produced by replacing lighting, for example, Pepco would write us a check at the end of the day. They would be compensated for their services out of the energy savings. If you look at other industries, the savings in energy is usually about 20% of your overall budget, which in our case is $4 to $5 million a year. However, you reinvest the majority of that savings in new lighting, new fixtures, et cetera. And it's a lease purchase arrangement, normally amortized over 10 or 12 years. So in today's dollars, if we do a 10-year amortization, 10 years from now, we have a true savings of $4 to $5 million. The benefit in the interim is you standardize and replace, using the lighting example, you replace all the lighting fixtures, all the light bulbs, and should significantly reduce our maintenance cost. You can re-lamp to different levels, so generally ending up with a better working environment, savings, and less maintenance costs going into the future. And again, there's no net cost to pardon me, to the authority, because they're paid out of savings in the energy budget.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Zimmerman.
So the worst case scenario is this costs us $93,000.
If we have them do this audit and we do absolutely nothing, we would have to pay them $93,000, which we do have a budget account for this type
worst
of consulting.
Worst case scenario, this costs us $93,000.
Yes, sir.
We did nothing with it.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, it may cost us zero. It actually may save us millions of dollars.
Correct.
I move approval, Mr. Chairman.
It's been moved by Mr. Zimmerman, seconded by Mr. Monomay. Is there further discussion? Further discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And now we go to procurement streamlining initiatives. This is an issue that has come before us. It just doesn't seem to go away. It doesn't seem to go away. Every time we turn around, this is coming back up.
Well, and that's because we've done a lot of work in the procurement world since we last talked about a year ago. Mr. Ray Griswold is the relatively new director of procurement. We have gone through a peer review by the National Institute of Government Procurement. We've also just recently completed the FTA audit, on which we received a 96% score, which they call that best in class. And we've also worked hand in hand with our new Inspector General on this proposal. So what we're trying to do is implement best practices at Metro so we can spend more time in the procurement world on the complex, difficult procurements, and hopefully some of the routine things, tires, batteries, fuel, things that we buy year in and year out, can be done in a more streamlined manner. But I'll let Mr. Griswold give you much more detail.
Yes.
Thank you, Chuck. Good morning. We're coming to you this morning to ask your support for some important procurement streamlining initiatives. Last December, the National Institutes of Governmental Purchasing Association conducted an extensive review of Metro's procurement operation. The objective of the review was to develop a roadmap for process improvement and enhanced customer service. In their report that was issued in March of this year, a total of 39 recommendations were made, all reflecting best practices in public procurement. Several of the recommendations require approval by the Board of Directors before we can proceed with implementation. I'm here today to seek your support to put these recommendations into place. I want to emphasize at the outset that we are not recommending changes to core principles of sound public procurement. Rather, we are seeking to make the system more streamlined and responsive, but only where it makes sense to be so. Next slide, please. We are asking the board to allow us to expand the use of purchase cards. The National Institute of Governmental Purchasing report said, and I quote, "All of the components for a highly successful P-card program are already in place. The program simply needs to be expanded to meet its full potential," end of quote. To achieve this potential, we are asking to remove the restriction on the number of cards. The number of cards is now capped at 200. We feel that the actual number of purchase cards should be based on Metro's business needs and not on some arbitrary number. Next, we are asking to increase the single transaction threshold from $2,500 to $5,000. And finally, to take full advantage of the flexibility and quick response inherent in purchase card use, we are asking that contracting officers and ordering officers be authorized to use the purchase card up to the simplified acquisition threshold of $100,000. I estimate that no more than 30 cardholders will be granted this expanded ordering capability. They will continue to comply with all existing procurement regulations, and they will be accountable to me as the Director of Procurement. Finally, in this area, we are requesting authorization for travel cards. The present process is paper-intensive. A traveler must fill out a form with 5 copies to initiate a travel request, and then another form, again with 5 copies, to seek reimbursement of their travel expenses. We use a travel agency to book hotels and flights when arguably better pricing could be obtained using the same websites that we use when arranging our own personal travel. Next slide, please. Next, we are proposing revisions to the board procurement policy as set forth in Chapter 1 of the Procurement Procedures Manual. First, we want to remove redundancy in Chapter 1 that is addressed in other policy documents, such as the Compact or the FTA Circular. This is really more housekeeping than anything else. Secondly, we ask you to grant authority to the General Manager or his designee to improve the procurement of basic operational goods and services, things like diesel fuel, inventory parts, utility services, bus tires that are required on a continuing basis. We are not talking about one-time procurements, but rather recurring requirements that are needed to support the basic day-to-day operational needs of this authority. We also ask that the board grant authority to the general manager to change the contract audit threshold amount, subject, of course, to concurrence by the auditor general. Next slide, please. As part of our streamlining process, we need to overhaul and republish our approval levels for procurement actions, but we need board approval to change some of those thresholds. Under current policy, when we obtain board approval to initiate and award a contract, and the winning proposal comes in over the board-approved amount, even by a few dollars, we must return to the board for approval to award the contract. This could add 30 days or more in processing time and several hours of staff time to prepare and approve all the board documents. So for procurements over $1 million, therefore, we're recommending a variance of 10% or $500, whichever is lower, $500,000, whichever is lower, as long as sufficient budget authority exists. For those procurements that fall under $1 million and are approved by the board as part of the annual budget process, we seek a variance of 10% or $100,000, again, whichever is lower. Lastly, we are recommending that for contract modifications, the board grant the general manager or his designee authority to approve cumulative modifications up to 10% of the original award amount, or $1 million, whichever is greater. Currently, the threshold is $1 million. But after the $1 million is reached, we have to come back to the board for every subsequent modification, regardless of the amount. So instead, we are recommending that after the 10% or the $1 million threshold is reached, that you grant the general manager or his designee authority to approve modifications up to $200,000 per occurrence. Modifications over that amount would come to the board. I apologize for throwing a lot of numbers at you. The point that I want to make is that we have carefully evaluated what we feel is in the best interest of the authority without compromising important checks and balances. Recommendations have the support of the National Institute of Governmental Purchasing, that I mentioned early in this presentation, and the review and concurrence of the Inspector General. Next slide, please. In conclusion, we request that the committee concur and forward to the board the resolution implementing business process improvements, streamlining initiatives, and revision to the board procurement policy. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Griswold. Anyone who remembers our prior discussion of these issues will not be surprised to say, to hear me say,
yes, sir,
that I continue to have reservations about this. I'm not going to go on at length, because I know that my reservations are very much influenced by the experience in the District of Columbia with purchase cards. But when I see a resolution, and we've discussed this, and that's why I said earlier, somewhat lightheartedly, you know, this keeps coming up, it keeps coming up. We have been over this issue. Now we have a resolution before us which would increase the transaction threshold. It would remove entirely any restriction on the number of purchased cars. It would authorize card use for travel, et cetera, et cetera. And in addition to the other proposals that you're making. And so I feel like we're, you know, I mean, this is going back to what we had before, which was the subject of discussion, the subject of imposing new restraints. And I know other jurisdictions have had different experiences. I know other board members have had different experiences. But I'm a little bit, and I said this when I was briefed on this, I'm a little bit amazed to see this come back to us again so recently. And I feel very uncomfortable with now, as if our prior actions meant nothing, and now we're just going to say, oh, well, now everything's fine. We're not going to have any restrictions on cards. We're not going to have any. We're going to increase the thresholds to $100,000 for 30-some people, I heard you say, and we're going to have faith in staff to and our procurement regulations to properly monitor this. I just I'm left with the same point of view as I had previously. And, but that's just my opinion. Others have different experiences with this, which I most sincerely respect, but this is just not my experience.
If I could comment, go ahead, I'm sorry. If I could comment, sir, with respect to the purchasing agents and ordering officers that would have authority up to the simplified acquisition threshold, that's not giving them really anything more than they already have. They're already warranted contracting officers, and they have the authority to use purchase cards, blanket purchase agreements, order releases, all of those kind of things. So this just puts another tool in their pocket to do that. We also, I might add, and I didn't mention, is that we get a fairly impressive rebate on the purchase cards. Last year we got almost $122,000 in revenue from the use of the purchase card. So while, yes, we've talked about this before and we want to expand the program, we think we're doing it with all of the controls and the checks and balances that are still in place, and we're just not throwing it to the wind. We think we can control the process.
Now, Huda, I think I said Ms. Hutchins and then Ms. Hewlett.
I'm glad to hear your comment, and I remember our discussion, and it's very fresh in my mind as to how we discussed it the last time, and I supported it the last time. But I do think one comment that might give colleague Mr. Graham a little bit more assurance, as well as I think the board would want to have, is when was the last time that we had an audit on this, and what were the reports from that? Because I think that is the measure that determines whether or not the process is being used well, and that we can feel assured that the responsibility that we're giving has the appropriate oversight in order to keep the level. I think we are trying to determine the efficiency level that the organization should work. And in my experience is that this is probably a good thing. But I'm also used to hearing back in a rapid response as to you auditing the agencies to ensure that your policies that are in place are being followed and that you're getting a good feedback on that. So I think that's very important.
I have three staff members that are assigned to purchase cards. They audit purchase cards on a continuous basis. The last audit report was done in fiscal year 2006, and it noted that there had been improvement in the administration and enforcement of the program. And just to give you an idea, one of the findings was that internal control issues were with $102,800 out of $5.9 million, for an error rate of about 1.7%. which is very low. Most of those errors were, none of them were fraud or misuse in the sense of buying things you're not supposed to be buying. Instead, they were somebody doesn't have a receipt for a purchase. Well, we made them go back and get the receipt. So actually, that 1.7% would have dropped a little bit, but those were the issues. They didn't have a receipt for their purchase, or maybe they didn't enter the purchase of equipment into their into the property accounting system, which can happen with a purchase order or anything else. So I think the audit itself was very good, and I would not be coming to you if, in fact, if we had problems with the purchase card program.
I appreciate that, and I just simply highlight it as a way of making a presentation and as an additional justification that yes, we can move forward and feel comfortable with that. And I think we may have had some, maybe there's any additional contribution staff want to think about that.
Thank you.
Ms. Hewlett, I beg your pardon.
It's funny that you raised that question, because I didn't hear any of the prior discussions that have occurred over and over and over again, but I had some of the same questions. And I think Ms. Hudgens elicited some of the answers there, because I was wondering, how has it worked thus far? Were there audits? And the last audit was in 2006, FY 2006, you said. And you were told that it needed improvement, but it wasn't fraud type issues. It was like those failure to submit a receipt, but there was in fact a receipt. They were just able to had to go back and get it. So it was procedural type stuff. And
for most of them, not all of them, but for most of them.
And then you said that you had that the National Institute of Governmental, whatever it is, governmental purchasing, said that all the safeguards are in place. And how do they make that determination?
They look at the monitoring. They look at the policy. They look at the past audit reports to see what they're finding. They're looking at our corrective action when we find a cardholder that has made a mistake. What do we do? We have a zero tolerance policy for cardholders. They look at our training program. We have a separate training program for all cardholders and one for approving officials. And they're all required to take that course on an annual basis, or when a new cardholder gets a card.
Well, so they have to take it on an annual basis?
On an annual basis. So we're very aggressive in training our cardholders and monitoring their activities. We have the capability to sit at a desk and monitor real-time cardholder activity to look for potential abuses or things.
I don't want to be, it's hard to... sometimes it's hard to move on. I don't want to be mired in yesteryear. I mean, I went to a trio kicking and screaming, but I just need to understand that the safeguards are in place. I did have the same concerns,
ma'am.
And I wanted to articulate that. And
we had Inspector General looked at these, and I believe
I'm right here. I'll be glad.
She's comfortable with those.
Okay. If I can reiterate what Ray here just mentioned. The Office of the Auditor General did do an audit of the purchase card program. This is something they sort of did on a periodic basis. And it looked at the FY 06 purchase card process. And we made 16 recommendations at the time. All but one of the 16 recommendations have been implemented. Ray indicated what some of the problems were. They dealt with things like purchase card holders. We're not taking advantage of the fact that when you use a purchase card, we do not pay as a government entity sales taxes. And we found that they were paying sales taxes for 101 purchases for $53,292. We also found cases where they did not have adequate supporting documentation. They also were making use of split purchases. For the sum of $21,749, and we found 16 split purchases. The one recommendation they have not implemented dealt with the need to establish a blanket purchase order for vendors that we made frequent purchases from. So that's the one outstanding. In the work plan that I had given to the board for the Office of Inspector General. We did not have an audit for purchase card. Certainly, if you know, you want, we could include that in our work plan and replace one of the other jobs that are in there.
What is it? Other people want to talk?
Y'all want to whisper in your ear.
who wanted to talk? Mr. Zimmerman, with a question.
Well, I was going to
and
ask
Mr.
before, which may be answered now. There were a number of things in here that involve concurrence of the Inspector General as part of the process. And so my question was, does the IG concur in that recommendation?
The recommendation to increase the...
The part of the process in here that involves your concurrence in the general manager's discretion. You know what I'm referring to?
Well, I know the one that when I sat down with Ray, the one that asked for concurrence was increasing the audit threshold. That was the one that was of great importance to me, and that is an issue I had brought before the board in separate sessions.
Okay. It says grant the general manager the authority to adjust contract audit thresholds with inspector general concurrence, meaning if he wants to do it and not go to the board, he has to get the concurrence of the IG. That's a change of process, involves directly the IG and telling the general manager it's okay for him to do that.
And in fact,
are you okay with that as a policy, as a process? You endorse that recommendation
yes,
for how to do this?
We endorse that.
All right. And since you're here, do you generally endorse everything else that the manager is recommending here?
We didn't have any problems with what was being proposed here as a means by which to implement best practices and streamline the procurement process.
I'll take that as a yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Is there somebody else?
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Monaghan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just my question. First, I want to go on record and say I am very supportive of this, the proposal, specifically the card proposal, because I think it's just a tool to put in the hands of people who do the work. And as a agency director, I know about doing the work, and it's good to have tools that makes it easier. I think Mr. Zimmerman's question about the thresholds is appropriate, because to me that's the one that we should talk a little bit more about. I'm going to ask what's going to appear like a completely unrelated question to get back to the point. How are we doing in terms of accounts payable, in terms of closing, getting payments out to vendors within our 30-day time frame? I think Chuck, the right person.
Is that related to this proposal?
It is.
Yeah, Kathy, do you want to give specific times?
I'm paying everyday vendors.
In 30 days.
We are exceeding 95% of
okay, because I think from my previous experience here and before, the issue of contingency in contracts has always been a concern. A lot of vendors kind of anticipate slower payments from Metro, and I think that if we're in the process of actually getting vendors paid on time, the issue of seeing variances in contract awards or modifications probably goes down, so we may not need to exercise this clause as much.
Right.
I think that's fair to say. So I think if we're keeping up with that, it should be better. But the question is, do we want to have another contingency, basically that we give the general manager discretion to authorize for contract awards or modifications? And I think that's substantive.
It's to have 75 range down to 45.
I mean, obviously, the closer we get to 30, the better on that. And I think we'll see some savings on contracts we issue. So I don't know if the board's interested in. I think the first one about the card is, frankly, for me, a little bit simpler discussion. I think the second one about the authorization at award and at modification is probably more complex.
Well, did you? What happened to the Inspector General? Where did she go? Because I looked over there for her and she wasn't. Okay. Did you find any, in your review and audit of this, did you find out find any interest that we were paying on these cards?
I wasn't here at the time.
And how much was the interest? How much interest are we paying on these cards?
I think it was minimal, and we went back and got most of it refunded when we found that, in fact, a merchant had charged us interest. We went back and got that. I can give you a precise number, but it was not very significant. It was a very small amount.
And you also collected the sales tax issues?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
The sales tax. There was no interest paid. It's a
no,
sales tax.
Sales
I'm sorry.
Sales tax is a separate question.
Yes, sir.
Oh, we didn't pay any interest at all.
No, I was thinking sales tax. No, in some cases we paid sales tax, very small amount. When we found it, we made the cardholder go back to the merchant, and the position is we either need a credit for the sales tax or it's going to jeopardize your ability to do business with us in the future.
Okay.
And they usually make the right decision.
No interest payments of any kind?
No, sir.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? Are you prepared to vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. No. The ayes have it. The motion is carried.
Thank you, sir.
Now, you will register my no vote.
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, that we now go to the information item. Which is, we always do this in a very summary fashion. Maybe someday we should not do it summarily because it's very important information. But give us the summation of this.
For each of these items, they've been talked about to some degree this morning. The wrap-up of FY07, as I said at the beginning of the meeting, we ended the year $19 million over budget. It was primarily driven by a revenue shortfall. Rail ridership growth didn't happen as fast as the budget assumed. On the expense side, I think we came in one-half of 1% over budget on operating expenses. This is the first page of the June report. The key ridership numbers are down at the bottom of the page, and the key year-over-year changes show that on a system-wide basis, we grew 0.9% for all practical purposes. We grew at about 1% last year.
There being no further business to come before this. Is discussion on that matter? I don't want to. Okay, there being no further business to come before the committee, this meeting is adjourned.
Go right into planning and development. So.